You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
He'd be a pretty cold bastard who didn't want revenge for the death of someone he loved.
I don't think the dead care about vengeance. This man and I have some unfinished business.
The first thing you should know about us is that we have people everywhere.
What the hell is this organization, Bond? How can they be everywhere and we know nothing about them?
This is the world's most precious resource. We need to control as much of it as we can.
Name check, Dominic Green.
He's a person of extreme interest.
We've already begun destabilizing the government.
You know who Green is and you want to put us in bed with him.
Yeah, you're right. We should just deal with nice people.
The man, Carol Shelby. Engineer, right. Race driver.
He'll forward this
the car, the Shelby
she
Mustang GT.
Unless you give her something she really wants.
To build my kind of car,
I think someone wants
I had to
kill
to make
you.
An existing car.
You two
have chosen any set of wheels
though.
I want. I take
both.
Mustang.
That's the expression.
Mustang is.
I think someone wants
I had to
kill
to make
you.
An existing car.
I take a boat. We need you to get rid of him.
When you can't tell your friends from your enemies, it's time to go.
Right now, I think you're the only person I can trust.
James, move your ass.
I wish I could set you free. But your prison is in there.
You don't have to worry about me.
This is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla telling you I love nostalgic radio and cars.
Okay, listeners, welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I'm your show host, Robert. Run your computers and Google TanTalk1340.com, and you can see us live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com, where you can find out all about us. And if you've missed any of our past shows, 721, don't forget to check out NostalgicRadioandCars.com. Good evening there, Ed, how you doing?
Hanging in on Tuesday.
Okay. Anyway, so we got an interesting show for you again tonight. Since we're on this, if you listen to the past two shows, we had a very interesting gentleman on. His name was Eric Glavitsa. He was the stunt coordinator for the movie On Her Majesty's Secret Service with Diana Riggs. and George Lazenby and Telly Savalas. It was a 69 James Bond movie. And, of course, you know, being a car guy, as far as I'm concerned, the star of the show was a 69 Cougar, 428 Cougarjet car, automatic. Which, by the way, there was apparently three cars made. One was kept at the studios in England, Pinewood Studios, and the other two were used on set. One was set up for the ice race, and one was set up for just driving down. So the two cars, those two cars got damaged, and if you listen to the interview, apparently one of the cars wound up in Sweden. One, they don't know where it went, and then the one that I believe was recently was the studio car, and I believe that one was recently auctioned off at somewhere in the excess of $400,000. Now, any James Bond car is worth a ton of money. In fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine not too long ago because I was at a luncheon with Jim Grundy, Grundy Insurance, and they, at the time, had one of the original James Bond DB5s insured, and it was in a hangar in South Florida in the Boca/West Palm Beach area. And it mysteriously disappeared, and there were speculations it was an insurance scam, and it dropped. It was dropped in the Gulf or the Atlantic, the Bermuda Triangle out there, but who knows how true that is. And so at any rate, Eric was on the, he was the stunt coordinator, and he drove the cars, and he also crashed a few of the Ford Escorts. So he later then, because he had this reputation now for being, he was a former race car driver, so he had a reputation for kind of, you know, coordinating crash scenes and rollovers and things of that nature, stuff that's, you know, really exciting for us viewers in the movie. You know, obviously we like to watch crashes and rollovers and things of that nature. And he was then hired again by Steve McQueen in Solar Productions to be one of the stunt drivers and help coordinate some of the scenes in Le Mans. And there's a picture of him driving one of the 512s. There's another picture. Well, I don't exactly sure if we have a picture of him in the car, but he actually drove the 917 when it crashed. He crashed it into the guardrail. And he got pretty good at it, I guess. And he became friends with Steve McQueen. In fact, so much so that Steve McQueen gave him his Husky 400 motorcycle, which was quite a bit of a bike back in the day. I've ridden 250s, plenty of them, 400s. I'm not a big guy, but a 400 will throw you. at any rate, so that was interesting. So, and then he went on to do some other small bits and some other movies and stuff, and then he ended up with a Kawasaki franchise in Austria, and then he was working with the UMTC, which is the Austrian version of AAA, and doing some other automotive consulting, and now he's written a number of several books. So he gave out his information, and it's I actually have it posted on our podcast page. But anyway, so in keeping with themes of stunt people, well, I have another gentleman coming on, a little bit younger guy, a little bit more and livelier, I guess, these days. And now Eric was good back in his day. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, he's quasi-retired. He's 84 years old. So he's still hanging in there, still going out, driving, and doing some club racing and stuff. So, but this other gentleman we got coming on this evening, he's currently a stuntman. He's also an actor, and he's also a custom car fabricator, which is kind of intriguing. So we're going to have this gentleman on. And he lives right here in Florida. And although he's been all over the world, he's been in Japan, he's been in the Far East, the Mideast, out west in California, up north. Pretty interesting guy. So, and I just stumbled on him by accident. And, you know, it's funny when you go to these car shows, you go to these events, you know, you meet all kinds of interesting people. And, oh, by the way, which reminds me, if you want to find out where all the car shows are in the state of Florida, definitely check out flacarshows.com. What's coming up this weekend is SAC 49, Shelby American Automobile Club 49 in New Jersey, at the New Jersey Motorsport Parkway. Should be interesting. It's the 24th through the 27th. We've got the Bonneville Salt Flats or Bonneville Speedway coming up. That's August 3rd through the 9th. And then you've got the GAA auction. That's this weekend up in Greensboro, South Carolina. Should be pretty good. And then, of course, the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix. And that is the 26th of this month. That's in all these started in a couple days through the 4th. And it happens to be the, if you were tuned into our show a little while ago, we had Mark Pilach on from the American Muscle Car Museum over in Melbourne, and then we had Lance Stannard on, who was the CEO of Superformance, and they build. They both have a number of GT40s in their personal collections, real and reproductions. And the Pittsburgh Grand Prix is having a special commemorative gathering for GT and GT40 guys. So that should be a lot of fun. And then, of course, Monterey Collector Car Week is coming up the third week in August, which that is an absolute must. Out of all the events, you know, I mean, I was trying to, my goal was to try to hit one event per month, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. And then in the summertime, it's just, you know, it's just kind of, it's a little warm. And when you're outdoors, it's not a lot of fun, and especially in Florida. Up north, it won't be so bad, I don't think. New Jersey might be okay. I will tell you that if you're out west and there's any events going on out there, there are super, super, super weather out there. I mean, it's like cool in the morning, warm in the afternoon, and cool at night. And that just suits me fine. And so, anyway, on that note, I think what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and I think I covered everything that I wanted to cover as far as events. Yeah, on that note, I think I'm going to have Ed just go ahead and fire up a song here real quick. And then we're going to go ahead and call our guest, and we'll bring him on, and I'll introduce him, and you'll hear all about some more stunt driving. You're tuning into Nostalgia Kingdom Cars. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Everybody's looking as she goes by. They turn their heads and they watch her till she's gone. Lord have mercy, baby's got her blue jeans on. Up by the bus stop and across the street, open up their windows to take a peek. How she goes walking, rocking like a rolling stone. Heaven help us, baby's got her blue jeans on. She can't help it if she's made that way. She's not to blame if they look her way. She ain't really trying to cause a scene. It just comes naturally. Girl can't help it. Well, up on Main Street by the taxi stand, there's a crowd of people and a traffic jam. She don't look back, she ain't doing nothing wrong.
In a little tense in here.
Derek!
I never meant for us to get the boot.
No, I was fixing to leave this place anyway.
You breathing?
I am obliged.
I have a bounty hunter that's been dogging me.
You ain't in no shape to take on this fella. We'll help you. For half the bounty.
Just my luck.
What do you two know about chasing hard men?
Going into business with someone's like going to bed with him. The more you know about him, the easier it'll be when things tumble.
Where'd you learn to shoot like that?
Adam Ferrar from Top Gear, and you are listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Turn it up.
Okay, we're back, and you're tuned in to Nostalgic Getting Cars, and it's time to introduce our guest for the evening. He actually had a part in that particular movie that we just played a clip from. So I'm delighted to welcome to the show this evening. He's not only an actor and a stuntman, but hey, just so happens to be a custom car fabricator as well. And of course, he's been in, done some stunt work in the movies, such as Fast and Furious, James Bond, Quantum Solace, which we played that clip earlier, Bad Boys, and the one we just played the clip of, Two Sinners and a Mule. So I'm delighted to welcome to the show this evening, Cord Newman. Cord, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, my friend. How are you?
Pretty good. So tell us a little bit how you got into the movie business a little bit, and the stunt stuff particularly, because last week and the week before we had Eric Levitska on. He was stunt coordinator and driver and all around kind of guy in the James Bond movie on Her Majesty's Secret Service and the movie Le Mans. So give us your backstory.
Well, I started in 1997. We moved from Missouri down to Florida, and I had become friends with a bunch of guys that wanted to go to the beach, and we ended up meeting these girls, and the girls and I went to a movie, and I ended up meeting a lady that was an agent while standing in the line to buy a theater ticket. And I ended up doing a catalog shoot that I didn't like very much.
I have to laugh because I know it's coming, but go ahead. Tell our listeners.
Yeah. So it was kind of funny because the lady told me that she thought I could do well because I could be a model, and I kind of laughed, and I pointed at my face. I was like, no, not this. And she goes, oh, God, no, not that. And then she pointed to my stomach because I had really good abs. She goes, they'll never use your face. And she was right. They shot me from the shoulders to the knees, so it was an underwear ad.
Okay.
But anyway, I ended up on Something About Mary about a month after that, and I got speaking lines on that, and the bug kind of bit, and I started doing more acting classes, and I ended up making friends with a stunt coordinator named Artie Maleshi, and my dad and I painted a Jeep for him that we did an 11-color pearl flame job on, and put a big block in it and a bunch of other stuff, and when he came to pay for it, he asked how much it was, and I said, put me to work. And so he did, and we made a lot of money and worked a long time and still friends to this day.
So what kind of stuff did he have you do?
Oh, well, right off the bat, he was doing a pilot for a TV show called Karen Sisko, and he had me kick a door in with Jake Busey and Carla Giacomo, and Carla played Karen Sisko, and Jake and I were the two cops, and I was basically a stunt guy that got an acting part, and I got to kick a door in. And then after that, he had me doubling David Caruso on CSI Miami. He had me on a bunch of different TV shows and movies, and just worked like crazy with him. So he really returned the favor in a major way. I used to go to the racetracks with him and all kinds of fun stuff. So we became very dear friends.
So how does this work now? If you do you have to have any kind of experience as a stunt guy, or you just have to kind of be very athletic? Or how does it take us through the process a little bit?
Well, everybody kind of enters a little different. A lot of our more talented guys come from some and girls, obviously, come from some sort of athletic background. It's not uncommon to meet somebody that is an Olympic gold medalist or has gone, you know, a long way in whatever their sport is. Like, there's a number of NFL guys. There's a lot of college athletes. But there's also other ways. Like, you can just jump in and start being a pad dragger, and you basically hang out with the stunt coordinators and hang out with the stunt guys, and they'll have you cleaning out trailers and mowing grass, and it's very Mr. Miyagi. It's all wax on, wax off. You spend a ton of time trying to learn the craft, and you train a lot. Like, you meet with friends and you do fight sequences, or you meet with friends and you all build a, like, we kind of got in and had a bunch of guys with cars, and so we went and did drifting together, and we learned how to two-wheel together. There was a pretty good-sized group of us that did that, and so we would ski cars and slide cars around and practice that, and then my friends and I taught each other how to make burn gel, because the burn gel the guys that were professional were selling was just too darn expensive, and we wanted to try out fire more often, so we figured out how it was being made and started making our own burn gel, and then that's what got me into doing more and more firework, because I was I quite enjoyed it. I was on fire a lot, so.
Okay, so, I don't know about you, but I'm not exactly a big fan of pain, but, let's go back to this burn gel thing. So we're not talking palm olive, gasoline, and, basically napalm stuff. We're talking burn gel. I mean, and do you have, how are you outfitted for, a costume to protect yourself so you don't get, serious burns? So how does that all work?
Yeah, the most common way, like if you're doing a full body burn, if you got an open face, you're not wearing a hood, you're not wearing gloves, so that it's more of a, you're doubling a particular actor and you can control the size of the burn. Generally, that type of thing, you'll have a couple wet layers, which you'll use Nomex, single layer, and you've soaked that in the custom gel the night before. And that gel is basically a very... it's kind of like petroleum jelly looking. It is not petroleum jelly. Nobody go home and try that.
Okay. Leave it to the professionals.
Yeah, it's got the consistency, maybe a little tiny bit thinner. And what it does is it just holds moisture, and it keeps the fire from eating the moisture out of your skin, which is where you get a lot of the second and third degree burn damage.
Is basically like a your suit that you're wearing is coated in this gel. It's like an insulator, and then it's never burning, but what's on top of you is burning. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's. I mean, sometimes depending on. There's been times when I did a big burn in Utah years ago, and I had to go from the back door of a house. It was a shotgun style house, and I had to come out the front door of the house. So they had saturated 17 regular towels, like bath towels, in 87 octane gasoline.
Ooh.
And we had wrapped those around my body, and I did a massive open face burn in a house that had been doused in diesel fuel, and we had a whole bunch of big mortars inside of it that were set with 150 grain primer cord and gas bag charges that had what we call lifters, which is like 3F black powder and some electric matches set under a 5-gallon gas thing, so it makes a big thing. And then I'm walking from the back to the front of the house, and I'm basically lighting the house on fire because I'm on fire in such an intense way. And so that stuff like that, I got pretty pink in that one. So I pushed that one along. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, so that one ate through pretty much all of my gel layers, and I could hear a little bacon sizzling as I was coming out the other side. So that one was pretty intense, but it looked great, and everybody was happy.
Well, now, let me ask you a question. So, all right, so let's just say this gets a little too extreme. What safety measures are in place to protect you, to keep you from getting seriously hurt?
We have a ton, and different locations allow for different things. I was filming in Thailand years ago, and I had been painted in a special type of accelerant that's a mixture of gasoline and contact cement and some other things. And then basically it's all the stuff that makes a really pretty yellowy orange fire so it looks good on camera. And then I was on a R6, actually I think I was on a Gixxer. I was on a Gixxer 750 that was cabled to these trees in a rubber tree plantation, and 150 feet of cable and that was attached to the front forks at the base where the axle's at. And I basically had to pull the bike 150 feet backwards. They painted me all up. We had two 4-pound mortars, Napoleon mortars that were on the bike, and then one propane cannon on the bike. And then I was covered in that accelerant, and I just had to ride as hard and fast as I could, which basically was 300 feet. And then when I got to the end of that cable, the bike would be yanked out from underneath me, and I'd flip over the top of it. That's when the bike would explode, and I would be on fire. In that situation, because there's risk of bodily harm over and above just the fire, your safety team is quite large. So you've got guys that are there to put you out, which is the number one concern. You just have to go down a little bullet point task list of what's the most important thing to keep me safe, and then what's the fastest way to, you know, keep me alive and get to the next step. So the first group runs in with CO2. Usually you'll have two or three of those. You have a head, torso, and leg guy. So you'll have one guy on the head, one guy on the torso, one guy on the legs. And you're telling them if you've got hot spots or not, if you're conscious, which most of the time you are. You should be. And then,
okay, should be. Then,
yeah, it's a bonus. It's
bonus. It helps for the next scene.
But then you have a guy that's going to have usually some type of Nomex, or if you are in a pinch, you can use moving blankets because they're so dense. And you have those soaked in the gel and then soaked in water. And you can wrap the people in those to help cut off any oxygen to any other areas. And then you'll immediately strip the clothes off and start asking for injuries, start looking for any bloody marks, because you've got a compound situation. You've got the crash that's taking place, and then you have the fire burn, which, you know, I was coming off the handlebars of that bike in about probably 45, maybe 50. We'd removed the Speedos and all that stuff because that's where the propane cannon was at. So I don't know how fast it was going, but it was probably 45 or 50, somewhere in there. And it's a pretty good clip to be yanked off the handlebars and then be blown up and caught on fire. So that's it. It's just a typical day at the office.
Is that a typical day at the office? All right, so there's a scene. You sent me some pictures, and there's one scene where you're kind of you look rather toasty, but your face is rather relatively exposed. So how do you protect your face? Everything else around you. Because this is a question I'm asking you for, like, not only myself, but everybody else that's listening. When I watch these movies, I'm thinking, how do they do that where the guy's, you know, on fire, but yet you can almost identify their face? Or do they go in afterwards and do something there magically with movie stuff? How does that work?
Well, it's kind of like everything in our deal. It's very rare that you catch the same thing too many times. So every time we go on set, it's the meetings with the directors. It's the meeting with the actor on what they want to have, because you're doubling somebody or you're representing somebody's character. So you want to watch what they're doing, what kind of person they are, and what the reveal is supposed to be. So that will allow you to figure how big or how crazy or how you want to set up your stunt. If you want an open-faced stunt, you generally want to keep your accelerant from... You do not want to have anything painted. And we call it painting when we put accelerant on.
Okay.
You don't want to have anything painted above the belt line and in front of the body. So you want to paint legs, you want to paint arms, paint the back. You can paint all the way up to the crotch, but you don't really want to get up past that, because at the belt line, you're still going to get a 2 to 4 foot flame. And if you put your head down, you're putting your head right in the fire.
Gotcha.
So that's how you do that. And then you can also, if you have to have the chest torso area painted, then you can gel the face, and that gel will give you 15 to 30 seconds of some level of help before you start to feel a little more than you should. And then the other thing is, it's direly important you don't breathe.
Really?
Oxygen will cause fire to chase it. So when you are breathing in oxygen, you're literally breathing in a tunnel for that fire to chase.
Ooh.
And if you get damage to your esophagus, it can be pretty extreme, pretty fast. And if it is, there's no saving you. They can't trach you. They can't do anything. You're gone.
Oh, wow.
And it's a very brutal, brutal way to go. We actually had that happen with a friend. I wasn't on the location or on the set, but we had one that went bad that was in the UK about 9 or 10 years ago, I guess. And he was a U.S. stunt guy working over there on a show, and it went badly. But it's the thing that you do is if you have to be in a situation where you might be taking a punch or you might be getting hit by a car, or you never know what the scenario is going to be or what kind of craziness is going to happen. So if it's going to be that kind of situation, sometimes you'll want to pack your mouth with something that'll keep you from breathing. And some guys don't like this way, but it's the way that's always worked for me. We do it with petroleum jelly. I'll pack that in my nose, my ears. I'll smash it across my eyes.
Wow.
And then I'll do the, and then I'll put it in my mouth, and I'll pack that up. And then I put the burn gel on over that. And you can put that on, and it's kind of thick, but you don't really see it because you're smashing it out real thin in the more visible areas. So that's one way to do that if it's an extreme situation where you have to be open-faced. But honestly, with technology nowadays, I've watched a ton of shows in the recent history, the last 2-3 years, where the fire gags are 100% CGI.
Really?
The cameras nowadays and the editing and the CGI work that these guys do is just so spectacular. It's really getting difficult to see the difference. Us as stunt guys, we see it because you can see the color gradient change and, you know, you can see how the 2D looks a little too 2D. So, but it's not very, I mean, they're getting better at it. And our strike last year that lasted, I don't know, 7 or 8 months for SAG, one of the main reasons we were striking was over the AI threat. And we didn't do very good in our strike. So I don't see the stunt guys having a very successful career in the next 5 or 8 years. I see that being something of the past.
Wow.
And it kind of going away. So I think movies are going to change a lot.
Interesting. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, since you guys really are kind of like putting your lives on the line, are you compensated? And you don't have to give out any numbers, but are you compensated fairly well and well insured? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, we do all right. We, you know, I think the average, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but the guys I know that are 20 years in and, you know, veterans that do a lot of big films, and pretty much everybody is in the, you know, $125,000-$150,000 a year to, you know, there's a number of guys that are touching that $1 million mark and a couple that are over it, but
it's,
that's kind of rare, but it's, you know, you can make $200,000-$300,000 a year pretty consistently. And, but again, I think everything in our world is changing, right? So not to get into the political side of life, but everything is changing. And I don't see the film industry being any different than any other industry. And we're going to have to adapt to AI. We're going to have to adapt to more advanced CGI techniques. And stunts is just such a high-risk side of what goes on. And we're expensive. You know, I've been on shows that are $25, $30 million budget shows. That's their entire budget. And they're spending, you know, 15% to 20% of their budget in the stunt department. And, you know, if you send that to CGI, you would be going from 15% or 20% to maybe 3%.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it is a threat. But, again, practical stunts, which is us doing them. Practical stunts are, it's kind of a dying art. Most of everybody I see doing it anymore. I have a friend of mine who I think the world of, a guy named Chick Bernhardt. He's been in the business forever. He's comes from a lineage of stunt people. His son's in the business, who's also a dear friend of mine, Brent Bernhardt. And Chick said years ago, I came home from a show in India and I'd shattered my leg and torn my heart. Yes. And he picked me up and put me up on this bar, and he's like, you're not one of the plastic generation. You're one of the old school tough guys, which I don't know if I agree with that, but the old school guys are way tougher than I am. But there's a lot of truth to that statement, because so many of the new guys are basically what some of us, I guess, that are in the old guy category. I mean, I'm approaching 50, so that's definitely getting a little long in the tooth in our world. But most of those guys are definitely in the plastic generation. They're wire riders. They're on a bunch of wire rigs. They're not hitting the ground the same. They don't get hit by cars. They don't. It's just not the same. The bar fights are massively dialed down. Like, I got friends of mine, like, you know, Joel Kramer and those guys, who are the true old, seriously tough guys, who go three stories off of something into a table and smash through the table. Corey Eubanks, another one of those guys that's really a wild stunt guy that's done every freaking movie under the sun and total tough guy. But those guys, they're doing three stories, hitting a card table and hitting the ground. And they do it two, three times, get up, dust themselves off, collect their $1,000 and go home. Huh. Nowadays, you can't get a guy to get picked up by another guy and smashed into a table without him having to wear all his pads and elbow pads and his back pad, and he's got his tailbone pad in, and there's a pad under the table, and then there's going to be a pad for a headrest, maybe there's going to be, it just gets ridiculous. And then they want to rehearse it 735 times, and it's, you know, I understand being more cautious, because you know now that the older you get, the more those bangs and bumps and bruises hurt.
Yeah.
And it's harder to stay working. But it's really just, I don't know. I know I'm kind of rambling on here a little bit, but it's kind of sad to see guys like, the man that started me was Glenn Wilder, him and Artie, Mike Curtin. Those guys did a lot to help me out a ton when I was young. Another guy, Jeff Galpin, who we don't really stay in touch very well, but he threw me a lot of jobs way back in the day. My friend Scott Richards, Scotty's the reason I was on Too Fast, Too Furious and Bad Boys, and he's the reason I was on the National Treasure movies and all that stuff, because he always kept calling me and going, hey, you want to come work? And, you know, you never turn down a job, even when they're calling at 2 in the morning and they want you 6 states away at 5 a.m. You're like, I could be there. I have no idea how, but I could be there. but yeah, it's, you know, the world's changed. It's all different.
Did you ever have the opportunity to meet Hal Needham?
I talked to Hal in two different settings with my friend Glenn. Glenn Wilder and Hal and Ronnie Rondell are the guys that started Stunts Unlimited.
Uh-huh.
And when you look at the symbol for the Unlimited guys, there's the rising sun and then the three little birds. And those three birds are Hal Needham, Ronnie Rondell, and Glenn. And Glenn introduced me to Hal, and we got to have some pretty cool conversations a couple times. And but that, you know, he was a very nice guy, but he was also pretty intense. Even at his older age, when I met him, he was a pretty, pretty intense guy. So yeah, I like them all, though. And, you know, Glenn was like a grandfather to me. I didn't really know my dad's dad very well. He passed when I was 13, and my mom's dad passed away when she was 15, so I never met him. And so when I got hurt in India, Glenn was my second phone call. I called my parents, and then I called him. and I don't know who could have made it to India faster, but my parents and him were both talking about buying plane tickets. And I was like, no, 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 I'm okay. I'm just going to sit in the hospital for a few weeks. But yeah, he was definitely like a granddad to me. Hell, when I had marital problems, I'd call him and talk to him about them. And whatever it was, I was worried about doing a turnover. I was worried about a stair fall. I always called Glenn, and he was actually a funny stair fall story. I don't remember what show it was on, but I got hired for a show in, I think it was in North Carolina, I don't remember. And I had to get kicked backwards down these metal stairs, and it was four flights of stairs. It was a really long, drug-out freaking fall. It was crappy. And I had to do it in a muscle shirt and these shorts. So there really wasn't going to be much for pads. So I called Glenn. And at the time, I think he was like 68 or 9 years old. And most people are, finding out what retirement life is like at that age. But I called him up and I said, hey, man, I'm worried about this gag. I've done a few stair falls, but they're all pretty much, I've never done one that's even outdoors. I've done a few that were indoor ones. I did one on marble stairs, but I've never done a metal staircase where everything's open and it's such a long go. It's four stories up and there's only one platform in the middle.
Oh,
so it's
going to
be kind of brutal. Yeah, it wasn't like it was like a little walkway in between these two buildings to take you up to the roof. It was not a fire escape or an intended for any other reason. It was literally to get you from the ground to the roof between these two buildings. And my character that I was doubling had to run along this roof line, and then when I get to that staircase, I turn to see if the guy's still behind me, or the character does, the guy I'm doubling. And when I turn to see if he's still behind me, he sure is. He jumps and kicks me right in the chest, and I go backwards down the staircase. So it comes with a lot of motivation, too, because I'm being kicked in the chest to go backwards. And so I tell Glenn this, and he's like, where are you at? I said, oh, I think I was in Fort Lauderdale then. And he goes, well, can you drive up to Orlando? I'll meet you in this parking lot. There's a staircase behind this store. And I was like, yeah, you can't just tell me? And he goes, no, 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 come on up. And he was always... I don't remember that man ever being in a bad mood, ever. He was always just so kind. And so, hey, Glenn wants to show me something. I'm very happy to go listen. So I go hauling butt up to Orlando, and I meet him off I-Drive in this random parking lot. There's a Denny's next to us. And he's like, what's the gag? So I explain it all to him again, and... he's like, okay, come around here. So around behind the building is a two-story staircase, and it has kind of a little 3 or 4 foot platform in the middle. So it's pretty close, just half the size, but pretty close. And he's like, okay, let's go up there and do that. So I go to grab my pad bag to throw on a backpack. We call them gator bags. So I went to throw on a gator bag. And he kind of laughs at me, and he goes up the stairs, and he did the stair fall. He's wearing his typical Glenn Hawaiian shirt, and he's got these damn shorts and flip-flops on, and he does the stair fall and gets up and goes, now that's how you do it, son. And I was like, what? And he goes, just attack the stairs. Just go at it. And I thought, well... okay. I thought, man, this guy's 70 almost, and he just did it without a pad or anything. He just whooped the crap out of the stairs. So I took the pad back off because I wasn't going to go up there and do it with a pad on. I did it, then I got down there, and I felt like I'd been beat with a brick. And he kind of laughs at me, and he goes, well, you didn't do that one right. I said, yeah, I don't really know what the heck you're talking about. So he showed me again, and then I did it, and I understood what he meant on the being deliberate in my points that I picked, where I was going to be rolling and how I was going to be rolling, and how you can actually move and control yourself going down the stairs. Every other one I had ever done, I did them very haphazard. I just kind of threw myself into it and didn't really care what happened. And then he showed me there's actually a right way to do it. The first ones I did would have hurt a lot less if I would have been just a smidge smarter. but yeah, that was Flynn, and he took me and introduced me to Burt Reynolds. And,
oh, wow.
Because he helped Burt get his start. He helped Lee Majors get his start. He was one of the first people to teach Bruce Lee how to fight for film, because he was the coordinator on Green Hornet. Or Green Lantern, whatever that show was.
Yeah, Green Hornet. That was it, Green Hornet, yeah.
And so, yeah. And then he was real close friends with Elvis Presley. Like, that guy just has... icons like that just don't come around twice. And the golden age of Hollywood's over. You know, I don't know that there's anybody that's, you know, John Wayne style or Steve McQueen style, Clark Gable style. I don't think we really have those. I mean, maybe Brad Pitt or somebody like that, but I don't know. Maybe Denzel Washington. I think he's probably one of the movie star type guys. But
well, let's. Since
I just don't think it's the same.
Since you're talking about movie star, we got a few minutes left here. Give us some of the names of some of the people you worked with on that were on some of the same sets, some of the well-known actors that some of the listeners might be familiar with.
Probably my all-time favorite guy was Lou Diamond Phillips.
Really?
He is such a kind and phenomenal person. And we did Big Kill together. My friends, Michael Sifkin and Scott Martin, produced and directed that movie, and they gave me a little shot at being a goofy Irishman in it. And, I got to work with Lou, and I got to work with Jason Patrick, and Jason Patrick was just outstanding. That guy played Geronimo and a ton of other stuff, and even though his star hasn't always stayed as strong as I think it should have been, the guy is an outstanding actor, and just being around him and Lou Bolt, you learn so much. I actually changed a lot of the way I do my acting stuff because of being around Lou Diamond Phillips and seeing how he did it. So that was actually pretty awesome. And then I've worked with Will Smith and Nick Cage and a lot of those guys.
How about Jason? My friend. Did you work with Jason Statham
and
Craig Daniels?
I've worked with Jason. Yep, sure did. Sure did. Worked with both of those guys. And Jason Statham is very, very cool. I've gotten to do a number of films with him. He's actually got a story that I don't know if I should tell or not, but one of the reasons why I absolutely just love the guy, because he stood up for stunt guys in a way that really endeared him to all of us that were on that particular production, because he just stepped up and stood in the gap for everybody. And really was an outstanding human being. I'm a big Statham fan.
Does
that guy?
Does he do a lot of his own stunts, or does he, for insurance reasons, they don't let him do that?
A lot of people claim they do their own stunts, and some guys go farther than others. So there are a few guys that get pretty wild. Keanu Reeves is somebody that does a ton of his own driving, and he does a lot of his own fight work and horse work and stuff like that. Like, he's incredibly talented. Charlize Theron is kind of like that. But everybody has a stunt double, and insurance companies are not going to let their, you know, billion-dollar box office star go get banged up too much. Like, Russell Crowe wanted to do Master and Commander, but he wanted to do the crow's nest scene, and they told him no. And he said, fine, I won't do the movie. And, so finally, they made a compromise with him. They said, okay, we're going to do the whole movie, and on the very last day of you filming, you can go up in the crow's nest, and if you fall out and die, it doesn't matter. So I'm probably being a little harsher than what they said to him, of course, but that was what they did. They put that shot at the very end, and they do that with some of the guys that are more aggressive like that. But honestly, I don't see that as a good thing. I love that the actors want to do their part and want to, you know, be the character that they are. I think that's important. But you put a lot at risk. It's not about eating your own ego, which I think there's a few of them that definitely play to their own ego, which kind of drives me nuts. Because when you get hurt as the main actor, you're shutting down that entire movie until you are functioning again. So, or you're making them shoot around you. So now you're hurting production, you're hurting the director, you're hurting all the other people that don't make that much money. So your craft service guys, your grips, your lighting guys. So, you know, if God willing, my star becomes significantly less obscure than it is. And maybe like two people know me besides mom and dad, then I would never want to do that. Even with having 27 years as a stunt guy, I'll let my doubles do it. Because it's not about the ego. It's about letting your guys work and do their job and make the money for their family. But it's also about protecting the production and letting the production get on with doing a movie. And, you know, you never want a stunt guy to get hurt, but their job is to be there so that if they do get hurt, the actor keeps going, the movie keeps going, you get another stunt guy. And, you know, the one thing I wish we would do is see stunt people in Oscars. I think it's absurd that they don't allow us in that. And the other thing that I think that they should do is when a stunt person is seriously injured on a movie, a portion of that production should be sent to them. It never is, never happens. And I think they should always put us in the credits. A lot of times we're uncredited in movies, even when we worked on them, because they don't have room. And, well, if you didn't have room, you shouldn't have hired us. So type one more name.
Well, on that note, Cord, we are up against the clock, so we're going to have to wrap it up, as they say. That's a wrapper. That's a take. Is that what they say? Anyway,
I love it.
But since this is so much fun, we didn't even get into the car driving in the movie. How about we get you back down the road sometime? We'll you come back on and hang out with us here again? Are you welcome to do that?
Absolutely love to. Anytime, my friend. Anytime.
Super. Now, if people want to find out more about you real quick, is there a website? Is there a Facebook page? Can they find out more?
You can just type my name into Google. You'll read all kinds of exciting stuff.
Cord Newman. Okay.
Yep, well, that's it.
All right. Well, Cord, I want to thank you for hanging out with us here. And of course, well, let's see. We got, about less than a minute, but at any rate, because we didn't get into the custom car fabricating and some of the world traveling and all this other kind of stuff, but we'll do that the next time. And say hi to your family, say hi to your daughters, and we'll see you here in the next couple of weeks or something. Next time I come stumbling through Inverness or wherever it is up there someplace. But
I love it.
Thanks for hanging out with us. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Appreciate it, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. I want to thank my special guest, Cord Newman, stuntman, actor, car guy, just all-around kind of neat guy. So, anyway, hey, I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in to Nostalgia Getting Cars. Don't forget to check us out here every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Follow us on social media. Don't forget FloridaCarShows.com. A lot of stuff going on. In the meantime, everybody, stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family. See you.